So this results in increased risk of sexual addiction. So benefits of abstinence until marriage. Well, we think more clearly. We make better assessments before we chemically bond and neurologically rewire our brain to someone. Better sex and more intense bonding when you do marry. It's better. Avoid higher levels of emotional pain if the relationship does fail. And avoid the risk of STD, sexually transmitted diseases in pregnancy. Avoid damage to our conscience and the guilt and the fear cascade that we talked about. Decrease risk of sexual addiction. If previously sexually active, if you've been previously sexually active, you're not married, allow time for the neural circuits to reset, i.e. singleness and sexual abstinence before going out and dating and getting involved again. Allow your time to heal. Now, these are back now. So that's kind of the overview of all the neurobiologic stuff. And now we're going to go into the questions with this as our background and our foundation to be able to pull from to answer the questions. Some of them are just data questions. This is one of them. What percentage of teens have sex? According to the sexual activity, according to this particular survey, which is a youth risk behavior surveillance, 32% of 9th graders, 43% of 10th graders, 55% of 11th graders, and 64% of 12th graders across the United States have had sex. The 2003 youth risk behavioral surveillance statistics on teen sexual activity and ethnicity in high school, 34% of teen girls in the United States become pregnant at least once before the age of 20. One in three. Now, get this. Teen pregnancy in the U.S. is 10 times that of Japan, 4 times that of France and Germany, and twice that of Great Britain. And you know what the punchline is, right? Yet the U.S. has the highest percentage of Christians than any of these other countries. What does that tell you? Just say no doesn't work. We have to change their beliefs. And we're not giving them the beliefs. And I'm going to tell you, it tells you something else. I think we're giving our kids a God that they're afraid of. And that impairs healthy bonding to God and the help that they would need to overcome some of these temptations. The majority of the teens, those teens who had sex, the majority, 60% overall and 67% among the younger adolescents, regret their first experience and wish they'd waited. So if any teens are in here, take a lesson from teens who've been there. Most of them think this was bad. They didn't want to do it. They regretted it and wish they wouldn't have done it. Another question. Why are people having sex younger and younger these days? Why do teens feel they have to have sex when they're in high school? The media influence alters beliefs. We form a lot of false beliefs based on watching television programming and media, such as everyone's doing it, so I must be weird not to. We have to replace a false belief like that with a truth. And the truth would be, I don't care who else is doing it, I'm wise not to. That's the truth. False belief, there's no harm. Truth, there is harm. You've seen the data, there's a lot of harm. False belief. It's what you do when you love someone. What's the truth? What's the truth? It's what you don't do if you love someone outside of marriage. Because if you love someone, well, we'll get to that later. If you love someone, you want to protect them. You don't want to exploit them. Media influences alter brain development. I didn't mention this in the earlier, but when a child comes into the world, the child has at birth, an infant, hundreds of millions of neurons, more at birth than that brain, that child's brain has by the time they're 8 years of age. First 8 years of life, the brain is busy killing off brain cells by the hundreds of millions. Now, at first, that doesn't sound too good, but conceptualize it like this. Michelangelo's block of marble when Michelangelo gets it, and Michelangelo's block of marble when he's done with it. When Michelangelo is done, doesn't he have less marble? But he has a masterpiece. Our brain comes into the world prepared to be acted upon by education, environment, experience. Neural circuits which are exercised or expanded and retained, neural circuits which are not being used, the brain will delete. Thus, you've probably all heard of tragic situations of children which were locked in cages. No one ever spoke any language to them. They are discovered and rescued at age 12, 13, 14. They can never learn to speak language correctly. Maybe 50 or 100 word vocabulary is all they can develop. Because the neural circuits that correspond to language were not used, the brain either reassigned them or deleted them. Well, this happens through the brain. Understanding that process of normal brain development, exercising neural circuits, keep them, not exercising them, don't develop them or delete them, Theatrical television watching. Theatrical television watching has the primary purpose of activating the limbic system while simultaneously turning off the prefrontal cortex. So the more TV kids watch during the developmental years, the more development of the limbic system, the less development of the prefrontal cortex. And so when they hit adolescence and the hormones hit, they have all this irritability, this moodiness, these impulses that they cannot process and control with their prefrontal cortex. And so they act out aggressively, irritably, often sexually, and will often turn to alcohol and drugs to calm a limbic system their prefrontal cortex can't calm. So television watching not only changes belief systems, it actually changes the normal development of a brain so they're more prone to be impulsive and less able to restrain themselves in adolescence. Divorce. The studies are very clear. Families in which there is divorce, the kids are more prone to have sex at an early age. So if families can work out their differences and avoid divorce, but that doesn't mean that if you're in a situation where, you know, somebody's molesting one of the kids in the home, one of the parents is molesting one of the kids, well, the one who's not needs to separate that situation. So it doesn't mean divorce should never happen. But if you can work it out and keep the kids safe, then it's going to help protect them. Low parental monitoring or low parental rules or coercive homes. So let's go through each of those. So if you have a home in which the parents don't really monitor or have any real rules, that will increase early onset of sexual activity. Or homes in which there is excessive coercive control, then that also causes rebellion and early sexual activity. Permissive parental attitudes. That would be parents may have rules, but they also say, hey, it's okay. You know, we did it when we were early. You guys go ahead and have fun. Permissive parental attitudes would connote an idea that it's okay. And then genetics. Believe it or not, studies show that the age in which you were first sexually active as a parent predicts very closely the age your kids will be first sexually active. And this has to do with the genes that control impulsivity. Impulsivity. And so we have an ability to restrain our impulses, and we get those sexual impulses, we have a difficult time restraining them. And so parents who have impulse control problems will often have kids with impulse control problems. We can make those worse by having a lot of television watching during the developmental years, and we don't develop the prefrontal cortex, which self-governs and restrains, we can have our kids that are even more impulsive than we might have been. Question, why does God allow something as special as sex to be sinful, to be a sinful temptation outside of marriage? If God wanted one man to marry one woman, and that would be the perfect union, then why did Solomon, David, and many other holy people have many, many wives or concubines? How would you answer the question? Are these questions about sex? No, these questions are not about sex. These questions are about freedom, autonomy, liberty, and the universe in which love exists. God is love, and love requires freedom. Genuine love cannot exist in an atmosphere without freedom. Those in a relationship, try that. Go home and begin telling your spouse where they can go, what they can do, who they can call on the phone, what clothes they're allowed to wear, how much money they're allowed to spend, and see what happens to love in that relationship. Love can't exist without freedom. God is love. We have real freedom. And so, when God gives gifts to his people, to his creatures, he leaves us free to use them. Did God give Samson strength? Did God control how Samson used it? No. Did God give Solomon wisdom? Yes, but he didn't control how he used it. And did God give humanity sexuality? Yes, but he doesn't control how he uses it. So these questions are about understanding God's universe. Whatever gifts he gives us, he leaves us free. So this is about freedom, because love is real in God's universe. Sex is so distorted, how did it get that way? Well, we lost the knowledge of God, his design, his methods, resulting in either, what did it result in? Either hedonism or puritanism. Hedonism, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. We're no better than the animals. Go out and have as much fun as you can before you die on this earth. Hedonism. Puritanism, sex is dirty and evil. You should never have it except to procreate, and never again. These are both lies, because we lost the knowledge of God, and we lost his design. What is the truth? Sex is sacred and beautiful. That is the truth. Have we not seen some beauty tonight in God's design? The union, the bonding that takes place? By the way, many of you that aren't physicians may not know, but do you know the bone right here in this part of your body? It's the sacrum. It means sacred. Just think about that. Why shouldn't we have sex? How would you answer this question? You should have sex, and lots of it, but only with your marriage partner. Only with your spouse. Premarital sex damages mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. That's why you shouldn't have premarital sex. Sexual active adolescents perform more poorly in school, engage in a host of risk-taking behaviors, including substance use and delinquency, and are half as likely to have stable marriages compared to teens who are not sexually active. So if you're a teen and you want a stable marriage, you can double the likelihood of a stable marriage by maintaining your abstinence. Double your likelihood. Will there be sex in heaven? This has not been revealed, so each person is free to hope yes or no. And I won't ask which way you're hoping. If sex is a mean of pleasure as well as reproduction, why promote abstinence when sex often changes the marriage? Premarital sex would help affirm a commitment, causing a more stable relationship, would it not? Kind of like test driving a car. How would you answer? Sex is not a means of pleasure. It's a means of unity, bonding, self-giving, self-surrender, self-exposure, and reproduction, which God designed to be pleasurable. You see the problem in the question? This is what it's a means of, and God designed it, and God designed it as pleasurable. Premarital sex causes all the biological changes already outlined, plus it increases anxiety, guilt, deception, which damages prefrontal cortex, causes more activation of the fear circuits, with subsequent increase in risk of depression, physical health problems, and damage to character. So it's probably not a good idea. Is safe sex okay at a young age? Using condoms does not prevent all the brain changes which occur during sex. Using condoms does not prevent guilt, fear, anxiety, deception to parents and peers. Condoms are not 100% effective. So the answer would be no. It's not safe. Is it a sin to have sex before marriage? Is it biblically wrong to have sex before marriage? Is sex before marriage bad even if you marry the person you had sex with? Two people ask that question. What is sin? The Bible says sin is transgression of the law. What law? What law? Law of love, which is the design template for life. We went through briefly the other-centered circle of giving that life is designed to operate upon. So why is something then sin? Because it deviates with the protocols for which life and health operate upon and can only result in ruin, pain, suffering, and death. So, and that's what that says. So then the question, is something sin because God says not to do it? Or does God say not to do it because it's sin? Did that confuse you? Does that make sense? Yeah, it's God says not to do it because it is harmful. Why does a parent say, don't play in the street? Is it bad to play in the street because the parents say don't do it? Or is it bad to play in the street because you could get hit by a car? It's dangerous out there. And that's why the parents said not to do it. What does sex before marriage do to you? This is the question for these. What does sex before marriage do to you? It changes you neurologically, neurobiologically. It alters your ability to have good judgment. And so, the last question about, is sex before marriage bad even if you marry the person you had sex with? Marriage doesn't change your history. It doesn't change all the stuff you did before marriage. So if you've already gone through a lot of guilt, practicing deception, lying to people, you have damaged yourself. That doesn't undo it. And you may not have married them if you didn't have sex with them. Because once you have sex, you're more neurologically bonded. That person can cause you to feel better than any other person. You're more attached. You have that airbrushing of your memory. Your discernment goes down. You might not have married this person if you hadn't had sex with them. What are the benefits of sex before marriage? None. But many harmful consequences. I couldn't think of a benefit of sex before marriage. What's your idea of the safest lines teens should draw in showing physical affection? Any volunteered answers? No, I see a lot of hits. No. Problem with the question. Bad question. See, this question is about how much can I get away with? How far can I go seeking to gratify self? We need to have better questions. And so we ask the question to the teens, how can I protect my partner's sexuality and help them become all God wants them to be? Better question. Or how about this one? How can I value, celebrate, and protect the other person who might be someone else's Adam and Eve one day? And if you're not sure about that, those questions aren't resonating in your mind, teens. Think about this question. Where would you draw the line for your sister, mother, or brother? Your dad died, your mom's a widow, she's out dating. Where do you want her to draw that line? Ew. Yeah, that's where that line goes, doesn't it? Treat your partner with love, seeking to protect their integrity, honor, virtue, reputation, and health. That's where you draw the line. Any line which damages you or the other person should not be crossed. That's where you draw the line. Sex, is it as worth it before marriage as it's made out to be? I don't know who asked this question, but I'll let you answer it. After all the science and evidence, what do you think? Is it worth it? If you plan on marrying someone after being with them for a very long time, is it sinful to have sex? And is God angry with us even though you love that person beyond description? And if you pray together and love God, then how is it wrong? I have a patient who prays every day for healthy lungs but smokes a pack of cigarettes a day. How could it be wrong to smoke if she prays? You see a problem with the question? You see, I'm not angry at my patient for smoking. But is my anger the problem? Well, will my doctor be angry at me if I smoke? Will God be angry at me if I do? God's not going to be angry. But prayer doesn't void your choice or change God's laws. It doesn't change the laws of physics, the laws of neurobiology that we all went through. You may pray, but that's not going to change what's happening. The only thing changes what's happening is your free will choices. Choices change what happens to you. If you love the person, you would seek their best interest to protect their sexuality, integrity, and virtue. That, see, this question, if we really love each other, if you really love them, you want to do what's best for them, not what makes you feel good. We don't know the future or our plans, and our plans don't always work out, so your plan to marry isn't the same thing as being married. Is it? No. Does sex hurt? Four people ask this question. Not as God designed, but it can if there's illness, physical defects, high anxiety, or it's done aggressively, violently, or carelessly. What is adultery? Any volunteers to answer this? Betrayal. Adultery is betrayal. That's what it is. The giving of one's heart, mind, soul, oneself to another. The failure to sacrifice self for one's spouse. This is what adultery is. If you're confused about that, just think of what God called the people in the Old Testament repeatedly. What did he call them? An adulterous nation. An adulterous people. Think about Matthew 5. You say if you commit adultery, you commit sin. And I say if you look at a woman with lust in your heart, it's a heart issue primarily. But it can include physical sex, but it doesn't have to. Are you still a virgin if you've had an orgasm? Are you considered a virgin if you've had sex other than vaginal sex? Why do people think oral sex takes your virginity? Okay, I'm about to show you a picture of the most important sexual organ in your body. You never really generally see this in public. This is the most important sexual organ of your body. It's your brain. All the neurobiologic stuff happens there. All the relational bonding stuff happens there. All the pleasure happens there. The brain is the most important sexual organ. Man's perspective on questions like virginity focuses on the body. God's perspective focuses on the heart. What's happening in your heart, in your brain. Lust, remember the Matthew 5 text. God is concerned about the heart, the character. So we have to take the focus off the body and back onto the heart to answer these questions. So what happens in the heart if somebody has a nocturnal emission? If somebody is sexually abused or raped? See, man and legalistic man would say if somebody is abused or raped, they've lost their virginity. God would say they're still pure of heart. They haven't given themselves. They have not violated themselves. Isn't that true? Absolutely true. It's not about the body primarily. It's about the heart primarily and what we choose to do with what the gifts God has given us. This is a book called Soul Versions by Doug Rosenau and Michael Todd Wilson. And they talk about being a soul virgin and taking the focus off the body onto the heart, mind, or soul. And they use this definition, soul virgin. One who continuously seeks to value, celebrate, and protect God's design for sexuality, body, soul, and spirit in oneself and others. And I think that's a great definition. And I think that's what we should teach our kids. That's what virginity is all about, a pure heart. Remember, David said, create me a clean heart, O God, and renew your right spirit within me. So that's where it's at. Where does sex start? What line needs to be crossed for it to be classified as sex? Does sex start when the pants are unbuttoned or before that or after that? How far is too far for high school students? Is making out just as bad as having sex before marriage? Sex starts in the mind. That's where it starts. Doesn't it always start in the mind? Absolutely. Sex starts in the mind. Any thoughts which would harm you or another is already going too far. What does it say in 2 Corinthians? We're to bring every thought into captivity to Jesus Christ. You see, we again focus on behavior primarily, but the behavior isn't primarily the issue God is looking at. You may never cross a behavioral line, but your mind, think what you can do in your mind. I don't have time to go on the whole neurotrophic factor stuff and how neurons grow stronger, neural pathways grow stronger, but we can control behavior. We can put people in prison. We can lock pedophiles away. Can we control what's going on in their mind? And if they're doing it in their mind, and I could walk through the neurobiology of it and the various neurotrophic factors involved, but if you activate the circuits in your mind, you spend energy on it, you fire the circuits, the brain produces more of these factors and make those circuits grow stronger. So even though they can't practice this thing, if they're doing it in their mind, the deviant circuits grow stronger. You may lock them up for 10 years, but if they're still doing it in their mind for 10 years, they may come out more twisted than they went in. So we don't focus on behavior only. We want to focus on what's happening in the heart and mind. We want our minds to change, our hearts to change. So where does making out lead your mind and behavior, and then your behavior? If God will forgive you, then why can't you have sex before marriage? What kind of God construct is going on with this question? A legal model. Yeah, it's all about, you know, getting God to forgive us. That's our problem. Is the sin problem God's attitude or our condition? What's the sin problem? Our condition or God's attitude? Our condition. If your parents will forgive you for not brushing your teeth, why brush them? If a smoker asks forgiveness but keeps on smoking, what happens? You see, the forgiveness from God is not the primary thing. God extends forgiveness. He is forgiving. The question is, what are you choosing to do and what does that do to you? Are you following his plan to be in harmony with his methods, to cooperate with his spirit, to experience regeneration and healing? Or are you choosing things that destroy you all the while claiming forgiveness from God? It's a deception. It's a lie. God's forgiveness doesn't prevent the damage of ongoing sin. Does it? No. Can you make sex with your spouse dirty, or is whatever you do with your spouse considered fine? Is anal sex bad if done with spouses? Oral sex or role play okay in marriage? Sex as God designed is the culmination of other-centered love and unity of two beings into a sacred bond. Anything which counters this is harmful. Anything which enhances it is blessed. Therefore, genuine equality, mutual consent, freedom, yes. Domination, control, humiliation, submission, bondage, abuse, etc., no. What other purpose for sex than multiplying the human race? Well, there's a lot of them. Bonding, genuine other-centered love, unity, oneness, entering into godliness, revealing God's character. All those things are part of what God designed for sex. Why is it okay for divorce and marry another person, but not have sex with more than one person? Anybody want to throw something out? Divorce only occurs when love breaks down, when selfishness wins. It's not God's design. It's not part of his plan. He hates divorce, which is not part of his ideal. But in a sick world, it is an emergency measure of grace to save and heal those in irreparably destructive marriages. Kind of like doing an appendectomy to save somebody from dying from appendicitis. That's what divorce is about. And believe you me, if you do what I do for a living, you can see there are some terribly destructive relationships out there where people are being beaten, dominated, and abused, and it is harmful. And the only solution to save is to get out of that toxic and destructive situation. It's not God's design, but it is an emergency measure of grace. The other, however, the premarital sex issue, sex before marriage, actually inflicts injury and is not behavior which heals or ends something harmful. It would be like cutting oneself with a knife when healthy, inflicting a wound. That's what premarital sex. So the two totally different contexts, two totally different things. Due to the fact God made man and woman and told them to multiply, is celibacy a sin, the opposite of love? Outside of marriage, no. Inside of marriage, it depends. And this is Paul's guidance about the husband's body is not his own, the wife's body is not his own. They shouldn't deny each other their body except for mutual consent for a brief time to pray and meditate and so forth. So, if withholding sex is done to manipulate, control, punish, or for other selfish motives within a marriage, then it is not love. It's wrong. What diseases can you get from sex? There you go. 19 million STD infections occur annually, almost half of them in people age 15 to 24 years of age. So that's like almost 8 million, it's 9.5 million a year, young people getting infected with all these diseases. Can you get AIDS from anal and oral sex? Yes, and from any sex, not just those, any sex, any exchange of body fluids. Can you get AIDS if you have only sex with virgins? Think that question through. Yes, you can. And how do you know they're a virgin? Well, they said so. But yes, you can. Because virgins, people who truly have never had sex, can still have AIDS. You can get AIDS from IV drug use. You can get AIDS from blood products. You can get AIDS from a nurse at a hospital who gets stuck with a needle of somebody that they're working with. Surgeon, I know of surgeons who've gotten cut in OR. I mean, you can get AIDS from lots of different ways, not just sexually. Why use a condom? Birth control and decrease the likelihood of a sexually transmitted disease. I don't understand herpes. Can you have sex with someone with herpes and not get it? Can you get it with the lesions are inflamed or when they are not inflamed? And the answer is yes. Can you get an STD from oral sex? Yes. How do you make a baby? It's like six people ask this question. The joining of a sperm and an egg, implantation in a womb. Pretty straightforward. Sperm, egg, womb, baby. Does holding hands make you pregnant? Three people ask this question. They're probably not here tonight. No, it does not. Can you get pregnant without having sex? Yes. In vitro fertilization, artificial insemination. Yes, you can get pregnant without having sex. Now, I'll tell you a really interesting fascinoma case here in a little bit about men getting pregnant. Can you get pregnant on your period? Yes. How can you get pregnant and what is the easiest way to prevent it? You get pregnant by having sex. Easiest way to prevent it, don't have sex. If you are pregnant and have sex, what does the baby feel? Nothing different than any of the time mom's body's moving around. Is it true that sex in a hot tub is safe because sperm die in the heat? Remember, these are questions from the kids. The answer, of course, is only if you're having sex with the hot tub. Is there a safe time of a month of a girl's cycle to have sex? No. Why do girls get so attached after sex and guys couldn't care at all? Actually, guys get attached too, but women are biologically more relationally adaptive. Their anterior cingulate cortexes, where we experience other-centered love, compassion, empathy, is larger than men's biologically. This is why women are more compassionate by nature than men. And women are more oxytocin-sensitive than men. So men do get attached, but women are more likely to be attached a little more quickly than men. How do you tell love sex from lust sex? That's a pretty good question, don't you think? Yeah. Love seeks to uplift and protect the other, so it only pursues sex within marriage with a voluntary spouse. Because love, you know, lust can happen in a marriage too, and we can abuse our spouses. Lust sex seeks to gratify self and doesn't seek to promote the well-being of the other, and this, of course, can happen. This type of mistreatment can happen within a marriage. How do you overcome the fear of someone cheating on you and stabbing you in the back? Evidence over time. It's the only way to overcome fear of somebody not being trustworthy is you have to see them over time and how they live and behave to see whether they can be trusted. Does a bigger penis mean more pleasure? No correlation between size and pleasure. Is masturbation a sin? 5-6 people ask this. There's a fully comprehensive blog I put on my website dealing with this issue with biblical references and everything. And so you can just go to commonreason.com in the blog archives and you'll see the question on masturbation. Why do I feel so bad about the fact I had sex even though I made it right with the Lord? Now, what do you think about this question? Even though I made it right with the Lord. You bring a lamb at sacrifice? Made it right with the Lord. What does that mean? How do you make it right with the Lord? First question, what does that mean? How do you make it right with the Lord? What does it mean to make it right with the Lord? What does the Lord want to make right? See, the Lord wants to heal your mind. Is your mind now operating in harmony with His design? See, this is the question. I had a patient who had married, had a one-night, single, one-time affair, felt completely guilt-ridden immediately after the affair. She went home, confessed it to her husband, confessed it to God, asked forgiveness. Husband forgave her. God forgave her. She went down to the altar at church, confessed it, got rebaptized. Yet 7 years have gone by, and she continues to have recurrent guilt. She's been down to the altar probably 20 times at church, had special anointings and prayer, and she's still consumed with guilt over this affair. What's going on? Well, when somebody has an affair, if you remember how the mind we'd looked at, prefrontal cortex, thinking, reasoning, conscience, good judgment, limbic system, all those powerful emotions, does somebody have an affair because their good judgment goes, you know what, this is going to be really healthy for me, my husband's going to be proud of me, and a good judgment makes this decision? Or is it because powerful emotions overrule their judgment? What happens? How does an affair go into? Yeah, it's the brain being turned upside down, basically. It's our powerful emotions overruling good judgment, and this is why people get into affairs. She never had another affair after 7 years, but she actually never changed the way her mind worked either. And so she was having the same phenomenon happening. For instance, at work, somebody says, hey, can I borrow your car? And her judgment says, no, I have limited insurance. You've been in 3 wrecks in the last 3 months. No. But her emotions go, I don't want her to be mad at me. I want her to like me. I don't want to have a conflict at work. And so based on fear and insecurity, she lets the person borrow the car. Now, is that substantially any different than the affair? No. It's feelings overruling judgment, same dynamic, same process. But where in the Bible does it say, thou shalt not let a coworker borrow thy car? There's no rule for it. She gets this terrible guilt feeling, but there's nothing direct to attach it to. Her mind regurgitated the most egregious episode or evidence of this type of process, which is that affair. So every time for the last 7 years that she allowed her feelings to overrule her judgment, she got guilt for the affair. And so once she began using her power of choice to follow her judgment, all the guilt for the affair finally went away. So this goes back to the question. I feel bad about the fact I had sex even though I made it right with the Lord. Has your mind been healed? This is all God wants. You don't have to do something to make it right with Him. He wants to do something to make you right. Balance your mind, heal your heart. So, just told that story. We can't change history. Whatever history, historical events, can't change them. Imagine that you have somebody's just gashed your leg with a knife. You're wounded. Can you go back and undo it once the wound's there? Can you redo? Once we made a mistake, can we go back and undo history and redo it? No. So we only have three options once we've made a mistake, once we have a wound. Option number one, heal it as quickly as we can, antibiotics, sutures, antiseptic. Option number two, ignore it. Nothing wrong with me, I'll be fine. Option number three, actively infect it. Rub some manure in it. That's our three options once we have a wound. Same thing happens with this kind of stuff. Heal it as quickly as we can, get our mind in balance, do God's design, ignore it, infect it, make it worse. So this is what God wants to do, is heal our hearts, heal our minds. We can experience, after David murdered Uriah and stole Bathsheba, he couldn't undo that. But he did experience a new heart and a right spirit. He was changed in the inner man. This is what God wants to do to each of us, and that's what needs to happen. Okay, why is our school so oblivious to how many kids, younger class especially, are having sex? They do not care. This was the answer I had prepared. I don't know. Does it still apply? Anyway. Is homosexuality sin, oral or anal sex between men? Anybody recognize this person? Yeah. This is, maybe helps, Caster Semenya. She is the woman who is South African athlete who won gold medal at the World Track competition. And her medals have been taken from her because they found she had a condition called androgen insensitivity syndrome. Androgen insensitivity syndrome, very fascinating syndrome, formerly called testicular feminization. You see, males, chromosomally, X chromosome and Y chromosome. Females, chromosomally, two X chromosomes. Now, the Y chromosome codes for the testes, and the testicles produce both testosterone and a hormone called anti-Müllerian hormone. Interestingly enough, though, the receptor that recognizes testosterone is coded on the X chromosome. Now, this particular condition is a condition in which the mom donates the X chromosome, dad donates the Y chromosome, the embryo is forming, they form testes, testes are producing anti-Müllerian hormone and testosterone, but there are no receptors to recognize testosterone. Now, why is that important? Anti-Müllerian hormone prevents the uterus and the upper two-thirds of the vagina from ever developing. So this individual has anti-Müllerian hormone, no vagina, no uterus, no fallopian tubes. But without testosterone receptors, there's no receptors in the body, so the labia do not transform into the scrotum, and the clitoris does not transform into the penis based on the influences of testosterone that is circulating, but there's no receptors. And so this XY chromosomal male is born a healthy baby female. All governments of the world recognize the rights of these ASI women, XY, to marry men. Now, who sinned? Who sinned that this man was born blind, they asked Jesus. Jesus answered, neither. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happens so the work of God might be displayed in him. Who sinned that this person was born with a sexual defect? All creation groans over the way to sin, the Bible tells us. The whole human race, the whole world has got biological defects because of sin. This is what's called intersex. These are all the biological conditions that alter someone's sexual identity. I want to tell you about Swire syndrome. Swire syndrome, these kids, these are an XY chromosomal embryo is developing, but they have true gonadal dysgenesis. In other words, they don't have gonads at all. The testes never form in any form or fashion. And so what that means is there's no testosterone and there's no anti-Müllerian hormone, which means that these XY little babies form with full vaginas, uteruses, and fallopian tubes. Born healthy little baby girls, but no ovaries. So they're sterile. But they have all the reproductive organs of a woman except the ovaries. There have been at least four documented cases now where through embryo donation, implantation, there have been at least four healthy babies born to these XY men that are actually get female birth certificates. And they're actually women, but women with an X and a Y. All of these different conditions are some type of sexual intersex between male and female. Mosaicism is when you have two different cell lines in the same human being. So in the same person, you will have some of the cells of the body with XX, some of the cells of the body with XY, or XXY, XX, or XXXY, XXX, you will have in the same person, different cell lines in the same person. One of these types of mosaicism is called a chimer. And a chimer is when, say, fraternal twins, you have two ovums and you have two sperms fertilized. So you have fraternal twins forming, and those fraternal twins will fuse and become one person. And so that person then is born as an individual, but they're actually two different cell lines. Now, a case happened in Colorado of a woman who was living with a man, had three children, and they weren't married, they separated, and she filed in court for child support. The court ordered paternity testing, and with paternity testing of the dad, and they also test mom, the paternity test came back 99.99% dad's kids, 99.99% not the woman who was filing for this stuff. So the district attorney arrests her, gonna fine her for all types of fraud, that she's in court crying, pleading, these are my kids, got all these pictures of them growing up and everything. So she happened to be pregnant with her fourth child. So the judge postponed a finding and ordered a representative of the court to be in the labor room as this next child came out of her body. And this next child came out of her body, took samples from the woman, samples from the kid, and it came back 99.99% not hers. Now the DA is going to prosecute her for embryo stealing, accusing her of going to some embryo place and stealing embryos and doing implantation to do some type of fraud. And some professor at Harvard University heard about it, flew out, tested her. She is a chimer, she and her fraternal sister. So she is her blood, but her reproductive organs were her sister's, who they fuse into one. So this type of strange and bizarre things. Now, I say all this because... Oh, and according to the Intersex Society of North America, those having one of the conditions listed on the previous page, 1% of live births exhibit some degree of sexual ambiguity, and 0.1 and 2% of live births have so much ambiguity that they require medical intervention or surgical intervention. So that would be 1 to 2 people out of every 1,000 people. So what determines male and female? What determines male and female? Yeah, think about this question, and we think about sin. There's a difference between sin and what sin has done. For instance, there are people born sterile. That is a consequence of sin. It's not part of God's design. It's a deviation from God's design. God designed them to be fertile, to be fruitful and multiply. But is being born sterile a sin? No, it's a consequence of sin. And we have to distinguish what sin has done from what sin actually is. And so what determines male and female? Do the chromosomes determine male and female? I mean, you guys tell me, does genitalia determine male and female? Does mental orientation, identity, individuality? Does behavior? You guys tell me, what determines male and female? What does it mean? It means that all these defects are a result of sin damaging this creation, but does that mean they're all acts of sin? Man looks on the outward appearance. God looks on the heart. It's not our place to judge others. We don't know their circumstances. It's our job as Christians to love a homosexual like Christ loved the prostitute, and bring that person to Christ, and in a relationship with Christ, as he renews their heart, any change in behavior will happen as the heart gets renewed to be like Christ. Any inappropriate behaviors that need to change, Christ will change those behaviors. It's not our job to convict a sinner, change other people. Is that right? So what can parents do to help protect their kids? I know it's a slide y'all been waiting for, last slide. Work out any marital difficulties to avoid divorce if possible. That actually is protective for your kids. Communicate parental disapproval of premarital sex. And this is not having a sex talk to communicate the birds and the bees. It's actually communicating directly to them that you disapprove of premarital sex. It has been shown that expressly communicated parental disapproval is protective and delays the onset of sex for teens. Avoid the ambiguous messages and the mixed signals, which would be tell them no, but then make jokes about it and laugh about it like it's funny and it's okay. You have to avoid that kind of messaging as well. Engage teens in a meaningful, warm relationship where you actually spend time with your teens, bonding with your teens. If you have a warm, bonded relationship with your teens, this has actually been shown to be protective. They will delay the onset of sexual activity when they have a close relationship with their parents. Mothers are especially important in this process, it's the data shows. Actively monitor your teens. Greater parental monitoring and rules correlate with reduced teen sexual activity, though not coercively rigid rules. In other words, these abusive, coercive homes will result in rebellion. But a loving home with enforced healthy boundaries and rules and monitoring results in kids being more responsible. and then limit theatrical entertainment during especially the developmental years, but that overactive limbic system, number one, altering the beliefs that people form about this stuff so you can protect your kids' belief formation and their brain development by limiting theatrical entertainment. And then finally, educate your kids on God's design for humanity and the reasons for waiting until marriage. Questions?
Talk just a bit about how Satan targets the image of man in terms of sexuality. It seems like that's a huge target for him.
One of Satan's goals is to put his image where God should be. And so he wants us to become self-centered, exploitive of other individuals, rather than loving and self-sacrificing individuals. And sexuality is one of these places where he can tempt us and get us to take activities which inflame limbic system, incite fear, damage prefrontal cortex, and cause us to be more exploitive of others. We can be sexually addicted. And sexual addiction doesn't have to be pornographic addiction. People have sexual addiction with people, and they go from person to person to person to person to person, and they have sexual addiction. And so this type of destructive stuff, it impairs healthy love, it incites fear, anxiety, and it actually causes these neurobiologic changes that impair the anterior cingulate cortex from other-centered love. Yeah.
It seems like there's a study in Idaho showed that in at least a certain district where there, the education had no benefit whatsoever for sexual activity with adults.
Yeah, the normal sexual education protocols didn't have any benefit, but the benefit was not as powerful as the parental interventions. The parental interventions were more powerful than somebody coming into a classroom and giving a traditional sex education lecture. They haven't actually done any studies on what I just presented. And again, tying it together with God's design and giving them that information. That's never been done. Because they don't do that. They do it from a very humanistic perspective. And they do it basically biologic birds and bees, and they do it primarily with STDs as the reason to avoid. And then how to have safe sex, which is all about avoiding STDs. They don't teach all this stuff in those sex education classes that we went through tonight, that I know of anyway. Other questions? Thank you all very much for coming tonight.